afternoon and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It is a great day to be in South Carolina, more so than any other state, and the whole 50 states. I say that because I'm a native South Carolinian, been here all my life and all the way back in the 1700s. So anytime I can promote the state, I do it. But anyway, I hope you're having a great day. Trying to find something to do outdoors this year. You know, no time to start like the present. So I encourage you to do that. And there's all sorts of things. We'll get into a little calendar of events here in a few minutes. But I wanted to start today's show off the 2017-2018 South Carolina Wildlife Sportsman's Calendar and Almanac landed on my desk this week. And it's just, you know, you're in the right place when you open up to the front and the first month is September. This is not a January through December calendar, folks. This is a sportsman's calendar because it starts. And you know why it starts in September? Because that's when dove season starts. So yeah, it's just one of my favorite time of the year when this thing gets here. It's, you know, I don't know how good really the fishing's supposed to be when they say it's really the best time to go fishing or the worst time to fishing. You know, hunting and fishing, hiking, camping, pretty much any time you can get out there, go. You don't rely on lunar tables or whatever else. Just get out there. Anytime you have time to go outdoors is a good time to be out there. But it's a good one. You know, the good pictures in it. Got some holidays in here. You scroll. I'm teaching a class this year called South Carolina Outdoors to some fourth and fifth graders. And I gave them all a copy of this Monday at the first class and, you know, started taking them through it. And we talked about, you know, it's got tide tables in here for the whole year based on Charleston, South Carolina. It's got your moon phases in here. And I think they kind of liked it. You know, if you're a duck hunter, you know, official sunrise and sunset times, that's all in here with the zones and everything. So if you're hunting in South Carolina and you're in zone E like I am, hunting in Greenville County, duck hunting, you need to add 12 minutes to official sunrise. So, and then it's got a few articles in the back. Let's see what, it covers like a lot of the tourism places across the state, like Capital City, Lake Murray Country, the Up Country, Santee Cooper Country. These are like the conglomerate, visitors bureaus, you know, they cover 5-10 counties or whatever. It's got some articles on waterfalls like Brasstown. Goes to Pigeon Falls and Licklog Falls, Station Cove Falls. So it's got a little few little articles in here. It's got a little bit on the new tagging system for South Carolina whitetails, and it's also got a great article here on family fishing. It's humor. Michael DeWitt does a really good job, but he talks about he was fishing with his younger brother, and he caught like the biggest. His little brother got a bite and missed the fish. He got a bite, caught the fish, and it was like the biggest bluegill they'd ever seen. And while he's looking at it on the dock, his little brother, he said, then my brother and my own flesh and blood flipped it back in the water. How many of us have been there and done that? But anyway, I love this time of the year. When that hits my desk, and I know it's a week or so late on the show, but when it gets here and it opens in September, I know it's my time of the year. I can start living. Speaking of living, let's do a few things on the calendar of events, which as always is brought to you by Visit Anderson and Green Pine Landing and Event Center. It's going to be a busy year for those guys this fall. They just had a BFL tournament down there. They've got, oh gosh, I don't know, 3 or 4 more fishing tournaments this year. Then you got the Bassmaster Classic coming March of next year, which is going to be fun. But anyway, look, if you're interested in going hunting in South Carolina, and I know archery season's already in. I've been out once, had 3 deer waiting at the stand for me. Too bad they didn't wait around after I got there. Saw one nice buck. So he, good start to the season, just seeing something. But if you're interested in hunting in South Carolina this fall and you were born after June 30th, 1979, you have to have a hunter ID card to get a license. Now, if you're under 16, you don't have to worry about this. It's just for people over 16 who have to have a hunting license in South Carolina. You need the hunter education card. Don't forget, there are classes all around the state. There's the online classes. So it's never too late to get involved. Never too late. Even if you're in November and December, you can always go online, do the hunter education card, go get your license. Remember this, people, South Carolina hunting and fishing licenses goes 365 days a year now. It's not the old system where it expired June 30th. You had to have a new one by July the 1st. If you buy one December the 1st of 2017, you won't have to get another one until December the 1st, 2018. So I really like that. North Carolina for years has done that, and I always enjoy that part about my trout fishing license up there, is that I knew when it came back around and when I started trout fishing in the spring, I needed a new license. So don't forget, you can always get that and get involved. The South Carolina Foothills Heritage Fair is coming up September 26th through the 30th. It is being held. Being held out there. This is just one of those things of getting us back to our roots, the agrarian society that this state used to have. You know, youth horse shows, old tractor shows, you know, canning. They're having a goat show. They got a bacon contest. Just a good family thing. Got some poultry shows and beef shows and all that. So just something for the whole family to do is if you're not interested in going hiking or just want to get away for a few days, 26th through the 30th, the South Carolina Heritage Fair, just a fun place to go and spend some time outdoors in what is going to be a great, if you looked at the Weather Channel lately for what stock I put in them, they've really got the temperatures diving that last week of September towards the weekend, you know, lows in the 50s, highs in the 70s. So it's going to be a good time to get outdoors. I got this, which I thought was really cool. Being a bird dog guy from way back, Sarah Setter Kennels, Mark Fulmer, has got an upcoming, and it's been postponed because of the hurricane, and I don't know if registration is still open because the postponement was to September 30th. But what he was doing is learn to train your bird dog with emphasis on how to handle and hunt released and wild birds. There's not a whole lot of wild birds around, so you're going to be doing a lot of released birds. But, you know, Mark's got 42 years of experience, with 27 as a professional dog trainer. He's trying something new. It's a new type clinic. It lasts 4 months, 12 days of instruction. And like I said, it's been postponed a little bit because of Irma, starting September 30th now. But, you know, he's going to develop an individual instruction plan for each participant monthly. There's a web-based group that you're going to be part of where you can post videos, ask questions, provide guidance to train your bird dog, how to handle your dog in the field, knowledge of bird habitats, gun handling, and bird hunting etiquette. This is also an excellent opportunity for plantations and shooting preserves to bring a new employee up to speed quickly. So this is going to happen in Aiken, South Carolina. Like I said, it was originally supposed to start middle of September. It's now starting September 30th. I don't know if there's any more space available, but I just thought it was really cool. And if you're into the bird dog scene, you got a new puppy, got a dog that needs some help, don't know where to turn, Sarasota Kennels was just a really cool thing that they're doing here. Learn to train your bird dog. So it appeals to me being a bird dog guy. Last week, you know, we had Becky Horace from City of Pickens over. Don't forget, coming up the 30th, they've got the Outdoor Venture Day with all the free workshops, birdings, fly fishing, you know, and it's all free. So you can go to Pickens, spend all day, get your hands around a lot of different gear, talk to a lot of people who know what they're talking about to get you involved in whatever outdoor activity you want to try out. Whether you're a novice or an advanced guy, you can find something there for everyone. Again, that's City of Pickens Outdoor Venture, September the 30th. Coastal Expeditions is a really neat place along the coast. They got something coming up October the 15th of 2017. It's a Cape Romaine paddle and hike. There's a few spots left to open, and this is just one of them. They got several scheduled in November, a couple more in December. But just a really cool, if you've never been down the coast, especially in the fall of the year, out on those salt marshes and all where it's quiet, not many people around. This is one of those ways you don't have to invest a whole lot of money in a kayak and all. You can go. They'll guide you. Great for beginners to learn how to do and what to do and what not to do. But just a really cool thing. So I encourage you to check out Coastal Expeditions down in Charleston. especially their Bull Island, Cape Romaine stuff, where you're just kind of out there surrounded by nature. It's just a really cool thing. Carolina Regional Quail Project Field Day. Little Hobcow Plantations, a 3,680-acre property near King Street, South Carolina. It has been managed for years for quail hunting. It's a great example of the Carolina Regional Quail Project, and that has partnered with Tall Timbers to educate and expand quail-based management, because we all, at our hearts, want the quail to come back. And I'm, you know, this is where my heart was when I was a kid, was quail hunting. So you have to forgive me. I get a little teary-eyed when I talk about quail hunting and bird dogs and all. But they are having a session on Friday, October the 6th, from 8 a.m. to 2:30. It's a field day. You're going to look at some of what they're doing as far as habitat management. And it's not going to be a one-day fix-all. It's a multi-phase process to get habitat back to where it should be. But this is the place where you can go and look. I remember when Quail Unlimited was around, we would go to Nilo Plantation down in Georgia, which was Olin Winchester's place, Pineland Plantation, which was, I think, Mellon Bank. I think the Mellon brothers had a plantation down there called Pineland. And we go, it was a part of the Southeastern Quail Study Group. And we go to all these plantations, see what they were doing. I mean, amazing stuff. And it doesn't take thousands of acres to do this, folks. I mean, you can do it. I'm really excited about some of the stuff I'm going to do on our little piece of land, because I actually have two separate coveys now that are whistling in the evenings. And there's nothing finer than sitting there and listening to those birds whistle as the sun goes down. So if you're a landowner, I know a lot of timber companies don't let you do this stuff if you're leasing land, but if you have a farm, 20 acres, I mean, you can plant a lot of things that'll help a lot of wildlife. And when you manage for small game like this, you manage for all game, whether it's songbirds, butterflies, whatever else, it benefits all of it. So again, that's Little Hobcock Plantation. You can go to the Department of Natural Resources, find more information about this. And today, really should have started off with this, but I didn't. Today is National Hunting and Fishing Day. And just take you back just a little bit. About 100 years ago, hunters and anglers were the earliest and most vocal supporters of conservation and scientific wildlife management. They're the first to recognize that rapid development and unregulated uses of wildlife were threatening the future of many species. And he starts out with Teddy Roosevelt. You know, we urged him to use funds, taxes on sporting equipment to fund conservation. You know, he started setting aside land, public lands, national parks, and all. In 1960s, hunters and anglers embraced the era's heightened environmental awareness, but were discouraged that many people didn't understand the crucial role that sportsmen had played and continue to play in the conservation movement. So, in 1970, a gun shop owner named Ira Hoffey in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, suggested we have a Sportsman's Day. So, Pennsylvania had the first one, Outdoor Sportsman's Day in the state, in 1970. They kept going. National Shooting Sports Foundation got involved. 1971, Senator Thomas McIntyre of New Hampshire introduced Joint Resolution 117, authorizing National Hunting and Fishing Day on the fourth Saturday of every September. Representative Bob Sykes introduced an identical measure in the House. In 1972, Congress passed both bills. In May 2nd, 1972, President Nixon signed the proclamation, and we have the first National Hunting and Fishing Day. And he wrote, I urge all citizens to join with outdoor sportsmen in the wise use of our natural resources and ensuring the proper management for the benefit of future generations. So, if you don't have somebody to take out today, there's always tomorrow, next week, next month. Get somebody involved in the outdoors, because remember, somebody took you first. Hang on through the break. We're going to talk to Patrick Ellswick. It's a little crackly on the interview, talking about when life sucks. He's walking the Palmetto Trail to raise money for PTSD. Hang on for more Woods and Water, South Carolina. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. He is a veteran of the Iraq War, a Marine, all-around great guy. I like to call him a friend of mine. He's also the public relations director of WhenLifeSucks.org, and he is hiking the entire Palmetto Trail to raise awareness for PTSD. Patrick Elzick, welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Hey, thanks, Roger. I appreciate you guys having us on here.
Yeah, anytime, man. Anything you've got going on, all you got to do is pick up the phone and give a call, and I'll get you on the show, and we'll talk about it. But you have a, man, hike to heal, 500 miles. We were talking about it a few minutes ago. How long has it been since you've had a 70-pound pack on your back?
You know, it's quite something. I've actually practiced a couple of passages, but going 500 miles, you know, it's going to bring me definitely back to the mental rate, because it's been quite some time, nearly 10 years since I've done something like that.
Unreal. Well, tell us a little bit about a while since you've been on WhenLifeSucks.org, and then roll us into the hike to heal.
Okay. At WhenLifeSucks.org, one of the things we're trying to get into right now, you know, we're passionate about the outdoors, just like you guys over at Woods and Waters, and, you know, helping people heal just from getting outside and, you know, things that don't even cost a lot of money to go hiking, to,
sure,
to spend time with your family, you know, to fish, to hunt. All these things that are, you know, that we need to do to promote the outdoors. So part of that comes with, you know, the funding issue that we're doing. So one of the things that I wanted to do was, again, I didn't need to hike and raise money, but veterans are meeting me along this whole way, along the whole trail. They're telling me their story about PTSD. And
yeah,
it's really cool because I'm writing a book on PTSD, and they all get to be in the book. And the sponsors get to be in the book, and it's about the guy who, you know, they didn't necessarily get wounded, but they might have cleaned up the Humvee or, you know, the vehicle that as I was wounded in, and suffering trauma for that all these years.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the forgotten man that needs to tell his story. So that's what the hike's about. And I have several different veterans meet me along different passages. And I'm really excited to go hear their stories.
That is really cool. I was wondering, as you went down the Palmetto Trail or whatever, you were going to have people roll in and do sections of it with you or something. So that answers that question. What, the hike to heal, what's the goal? And tell us where you're going to be doing that at.
Well, the goal is, I think I have 7 stops, which, you know, I'll email you guys later. You guys can keep up with the stops. So I have different press releases. The goal, you know, trying to reach $100,000, 100% will go into the program,
okay,
the Winline Sucks Foundation. So I personally don't get any money, but it goes to the foundation, and we're trying to take the foundation to the next level, to get involved with them there to the website and give, or just, you know, I don't even, you know, the monetary money's not a big issue. Just come out and support these veterans that are walking along the road with you and come into those towns, man, and just give them a round of applause. Cause some of these guys are 70, 80 years old, and they're decided they want to come out and share their story with me. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Palmetto Trail is 500 miles long. How long is it going to take you to hike the whole thing?
So I've got an estimation time. I think I'll be done around the end of October.
Okay.
So it's going to take me 4 to 5 weeks to do it.
Okay.
That's if everything goes good, you know. hopefully everything will go good, and in 5 weeks, you know, I'll be back home. But it's about finding myself, too, about struggles with PTSD. So I'm excited for the hike, just because, you know, being in nature, you know this all too well, and it's something you guys are all about, is, you know, getting in the outdoors, get kids in the outdoors, exploring nature, and it's free to do that. Sometimes we need to step back and find ourselves.
Right.
And what a great opportunity it's going to be to do that.
It is. Well, look, the organization is WhenLifeSucks.org. Hey, you can go to there, look at the events page, find the hike to heal. You can donate right there. I mean, it you can print it out, donate per mile, 10 cents, 50 cents a mile, a dollar per mile, and you'll take these all the way through the end of your hike, right?
Yes, sir. And it's a 501c3, so we're a tax-deductible organization, and people will know that. And it's been pretty incredible because we've had so many companies. And I want to put this out because, you know, you've been an outdoor guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of outdoor stores that got involved into this and said, man, we want to outfit you, Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
With your stuff. And what's been really cool is they give veteran discounts. They want people to know how much they love veterans. And my main sponsor is Mass General Store. And
okay.
They jumped on board and they came on and said, Patrick, we want to help you. We want people to know that we support our veterans in the area to give them a discount. And you know, Osprey packs, Elbow Shoes, all these guys hooked me up with the gear there, and I'm very grateful for that, because, you know, I was going to do the hunt either way, but for having them reach out to me was a pretty special thing, and they want everyone to know, and we can do a trade discount. We support our veterans, so, you know, they're pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Where are you going to be posting updates, like where you're going to be? So if somebody wants to come out and see you on the trail or something, is there somewhere they can go to check your progress?
Absolutely. You can get on our Facebook page, or you can go to Instagram, and it's at WLS Foundation.
Okay.
But my first one, just so people know, is in Wahala on Friday. Actually Friday.
Okay.
And at noon. And one of the things that I would like for people to come out to, it's at the Veteran Museum. And it's going to be a really special event, because I'm donating a jacket to, someone who's fallen from PTSD.
Okay.
And I'm donating a flight jacket to the museum. And this is not about me. This is about all these guys.
Sure.
That's what this is about. And so I'm donating the jacket. And, you know, we have all kinds of people involved in this. Mayor will be there. And it's going to be pretty cool.
Well, what you're doing is incredible, Patrick. Keep me posted where you are. Who knows? I may break free, come down and hike a day with you or something, or spend some time with you. And, but for sure, we appreciate what you're doing for our veterans. We appreciate your service to our country, because you're a veteran. You struggle with PTSD yourself. And, anytime you got something going on, man, you just let me know. I'd love to talk to you.
Hey, Roger, I want to thank you, because, you know, we've been friends, but I love what you're doing at Living Waters, and you guys have partnered with us and always been a supporter of the military also and our organization. So I can't thank you enough for everything you guys do for me and for what we believe in getting kids in the outdoors. So if anybody is listening, and, you know, I want them to support this cause too, because this is a worthwhile, you know, radio station that we listen to and been part of. So we appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate it, Patrick. You take care of yourself. Good luck on the hike, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Roger.
See ya. And it's another great day on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Until your guest informs you that he is out on the lake fishing and catching fish, and he just wants you to know that, you know, there are other things to do besides sit behind a microphone in the studio and do a radio show. But welcome to Anthony Gagliardi. It's good to talk to you again.
I'm glad to be here. Just to let you know, I'm not doing it. I'm just doing it for you. I just want to make sure I had good cell phone reception.
Oh,
that's the only reason I'm out here, I promise.
Okay. But it sounds so much better.
That being said, no, if they come up schooling, you might need to be prepared for a couple seconds of dead silence if they come up schooling really good.
Oh, man, are they still doing that on Lake Murray?
Yeah, they've still been pretty good. The schooling might have been pretty good. The stripers have been schooling. The bass are still biting on a lot of the same kind of stuff that I caught them on back in the Cubs.
So, yeah.
Yeah, if I did really have a deep desire to come out here and fish, it would be probably be pretty good still, but I haven't fished all that much since the Cup, in all honesty.
You know, we talked about that a lot, that, you know, you seem to get your fill of fishing during the tournament season, and then you got other stuff you like to do on your time off.
I do. I still enjoy it, don't get me wrong. And I brought crews out here a couple of evenings. My son,
yeah,
he'll catch some stripers and stuff like that, but there's just a lot of other stuff going on, baseball and different extracurricular after school activities,
sure,
that I like to be involved with them, and so fishing kind of takes a back seat this time of year until all that stuff quiets down, and
yeah,
and then I'll start thinking about it a little bit more once it starts cooling off.
I gotcha. Well, speaking of the Cup, it was a really good year, third place angler year points. I don't think, I mean, you know, I watched you a lot at the Cup, and I don't think you did anything wrong. It's just, you know, fifth place was, it was a great finish, but when you start pulling in what we had, five bags over 20 pounds, it's just tough.
Well, I mean, you're right, and they just came up schooling here next to me. It broke my concentration. But no, it wasn't anything that I did. I mean, when I look back on it after the fact, I mean, I did, you know, there might have been a few things that I could have done differently, you know, to maybe give myself a better chance to catch some more big fish that okay. I would have needed. But, really the biggest thing was that the bite, it got too good. I mean, honestly, yeah. I mean, that's what happened for me. I mean, the bite just got too good, and it negated a lot of the advantage that I might have had. You know, a lot of the places where I knew fish would be, they were there. They were yeah. going to be there. But the bite turning on like it did, it just put them in a lot of other places too. And those guys are just.
You there?
There was just a lot of fish available and up there in that zone that were catchable. And that's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I mean, it's great that the lake fish great like that. But if I had known it was going to take those kind of weights, I probably would have done a few things differently. But all in all, I mean, like you said, I mean, it wasn't a bad tournament for me, so no. I was still pleased. And after that initial disappointment of, you know, not coming away with the win wore off, I mean, I was still pleased with it.
Yeah, I know Kristen was kind of worried. He's so hard on himself, and I don't know, a couple of days after the Cup was over, she takes me and goes, you know, he's really been pretty good. And I said, well, he fished doggone good, you know? You caught one of the biggest, you told me you caught one of the biggest fish you've ever caught on that herring bite. And right. I saw you bring it in. What, it was a little over 6 pounds, maybe?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit over 6 pounds, maybe 6.5 pounder. Definitely the biggest one that I've ever caught on this summertime type herring bite, the schooling bite. And we've caught some bigger fish early in the year. Like a lot of times you'll get some pre-spawn fish
sure.
centered around the herring spawn, you know, in that April and May period. And you do stand a chance to catch a, you know, an 8 pounder or something like that then. But you know, to catch a 6.5 out there in August, that was by far the biggest I'd caught that time of year. So it was a, you know, when that fish broke the water, I knew I had a big one.
Sure.
I knew I had a good fish on. And I was thinking, you know, somewhere in that, you know, 5 pound range. But yeah, when that fish came up, I mean, really, and I was like, well, man, that's a giant. And my heart started beating and all that good stuff, but got him in relatively easy for one that size. I mean, it kind of came straight to the boat and didn't have much problems with him. But yeah, that was a huge fish for
yeah.
that time of year.
And my picture's blurry. Can you believe I was, you know, it was really neat to see, except for maybe a couple of people that people gave everybody space. They weren't in your way too much. But I was so far off when I was taking that picture. Instead of focusing on you and the fish, it's focused the tree line behind you. So the
right.
trees.
Well, that's all right.
The tree's 300 yards behind you in perfect focus, and you're fuzzy. That's just what
well,
you deal
I'll
with.
I'll have to do it again and give you another opportunity.
I would appreciate that. That would have been a great picture because she was out of the water. I mean, she was out of the water, bowed up, and you had the net under.
Really?
I mean, it was just going to be a great picture, and
right.
it just a little fuzzy.
I still got a pretty good picture in my head, though.
Oh, I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. But, you know, you had 20-pound bags coming in all week. Nobody would have thought that would happen. I know everybody was talking if you had a 15-pound bag one day, you were going to be good.
Right.
And on Sunday, it just fell into place for him, didn't it, Justin?
Yeah, it did. He got on some early and caught some big fish early, and that's what you really need on a final day like that, just to kind of, you know, you get a couple big ones in the box off the bat, and it just makes a huge difference. And it was kind of opposite with me. I had some opportunities that final day. I was around a lot of big fish, same place that I caught that big one on the first day. I mean, there
right.
was a lot of big fish schooling there. There was some stripers mixed in with them, but I got to see an awful lot of, you know, 5 pound largemouth, and it was just frustrating. I never got many bites there that morning. I only got two that were really small, and
yeah.
And it was just the opposite day for me compared to Justin. I mean, I struggled, only had those two small fish after lunchtime, and got into a little bit of panic mode and started running some different stuff. And finally, there late in the day, I mean, it was after 1 o'clock, I decided to come back down the lake and fish some of my stuff, and it was just, it was night and day difference between the morning, and then they had turned on, a little bit of wind had kicked up.
Right.
In that last 2 hours, I mean, I caught, I don't know how many keepers I caught, 8 or 9 keepers or so, called the 2 that I had, and ended up with 15 pounds. Wasn't close to near enough, but definitely saved the, you know, I was able to salvage some spots on that last day, the keeper dropping too far, but it was just, it, had I known that that bite was going to kick on, I would have stayed there, obviously, all day. I wouldn't have wasted so much time running up the river trying to fish in brush piles, but that's what happens when you don't get something to go right for you first thing in the morning. It just, it lets those little things get into your head, and then you start, you know, you start to panic a little bit, and you start trying to do too much. So that's the difference between having a bad morning and having a good morning. If I'd have caught one or two good fish that morning, I would have stuck it out, and I'd have given myself a lot better opportunity to have a bigger bag that last day.
Yeah, I know we sat there for, what, maybe an hour and a half on that one spot, and then you started running down towards the dam, and you'd pull over here and make 2 or 3 casts. You pick up, you run, and, you know, followed you all the way to the dam. And I had to come off the water early that day, but the last view I had of you, you were over on the Lexington side of the lake just going. And I was like, he's trying some other things this morning because what he was doing is not working for him.
Right. And that wasn't, that's what I should have been doing. I mean, that was the right thing for me to do. It was just that morning time in the places that I was fishing, it wasn't good. I feel really certain if I'd have made that same little run that I made that you followed me on, if I had done that in the afternoon, I'd have caught a couple big fish. I mean, it was just the difference in that type. I wasn't looking for schooling fish then. I was looking for suspended fish over brush and over that cane. And it just, that's what turned on in the afternoon. You know, those guys caught some schooling early in the day, and that just that targeting those fish that weren't actively feeding wasn't good in the morning. Yeah. And I just ran that stuff too early is what happened. I think if I'd have done it later, I'd have stood a lot better chance to get one or two of those big fish like I needed.
Now, when you were making those stops and going and all and riding with you, I know you got panoptics on the boat. Is it that easy to pull up, make a couple casts, determine there's no fish there, and just keep moving?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the panoptics helped, and I did it several times on that final day. I called my shot. I told my guy I'm about to catch one. I could see the fish on the panoptics coming up off the brush, and they would, in 5 seconds after I said that, one would bite and I'd catch him. But
wow,
you can. I mean, and before I had that, I was really good at making hard lineups and memorizing my lineups. So
right.
I mean, if I had a flagpole in somebody's yard, I'd line up with the corner of a dock or whatever, and I could pull up on those brush piles and even without any electronics. Granted, you needed to be in within casting range,
sure,
and you used electronics for that, but use that lineup, and so your first cast, you know you hit it. I mean, you know you came right over top of it. 99 times out of 100, if there's any fish there that are willing to bite, that first cast, the first time you get a bait in that strike zone, they're going to come up and you're going to get a bite. So if I make a cast that I know 100% came over top of my target and I didn't get a bite, then I'm already thinking about my next spot after that first cast. I mean, I'll give it one or two. I mean, I'll make some casts over to the left or right just in case that school might be sitting off of that target, but it's going to happen right away if it's usually going to happen. And so that just enables you the time to, you can spend more time running.
Sure.
You know, you can just, if you pull up and you don't catch one right away, then you run to your next one and you can just fish an awful lot of places like that.
And that, folks, is your tip of the day. You know, I was going to say if you had something specific about how to fish that bite, and there you go. If you know where you are and you know where you need to cast, just like you said, if they're there, they're going to bite. If not, keep moving.
Yeah, I mean, it's that simple. It really is that simple. And you don't have to have, a ton of electronics to do that. I mean, it's all about triangulation and just if you get a really good lineup, you just have any graph at all that'll read depth and read any kind of brush. You just position yourself right over top of that brush pile and just look around. I mean, you just look around and try to find the best and most easily distinguishable lineup. I try not to use buoys because buoys will move a little bit. Sometimes you have to. But you know, tree lines and, you know, docks and roof lines and flagpoles and all that, water towers, anything like that. Just if you can get a good lineup, and remember it and write it down if you have to, which I do a lot. That enables you to really make best use of your time when you're fishing that kind of bite.
See, folks, this is what you can do when you know what you're doing out on the water. And like me, get out there and just keep throwing. I know there's a fish there somewhere. He's going to bite. It may take him 2 hours, but he's going to bite. I can afford to do that because I'm not, you know, I'm not getting paid for it. Level rods. Man, you are in Palmetto State Armory in Columbia now with level rods. You walk in the door, take a right, and they're just right there around the counter. It's great to see them out there.
Yeah, we were happy to get them in there. They've actually sold, quite a few in there, so they're doing good, and it's just good to, get them out anywhere. The guys can go in and they can see them, they can pick it up and feel it, and obviously, I mean, that's what people want. It's a new product, and there's just, you know, most people have not either seen one or they've not had a chance to pick one up, so I mean, it's hard to order a rod off the internet. I'm the same way. I mean, if I haven't really felt something, I don't know a whole lot about it. I mean, I'd like to see it in person first. And, it's been good that we've got them in there and, some people have gone in there and feel them. And once you pick the rod up and play around with it a little bit, you realize that it is a good quality rod and they've done really well in there. We've been really pleased.
They are good rods. I've got the 7.4 spinning. I can't wait to get it out and use it one of these days. Light.
Well, come down as soon as we get off. You come down and we'll catch one on that 7.4 as soon as you get here. I mean, literally 5 minutes after you get here, I'll have you one on.
See, you should not be saying things like that to me when you know how much I want to go fishing, because I might just show up down there.
Yeah, well, come on.
It's great stuff. You know, the 7.4, and people talk about a spinning rod. When you told me you had a 7.4 spinning rod, I was like, yeah, okay. The most spinning rod, people like 6.6, 7 at a stretch. Why a 7.4?
Well, you know, I did it originally. Originally, it was a smallmouth specific rod.
Okay.
And that's kind of, that's just where it started. And it all started with me. I had a custom rod built, you know, 7 or 8 years ago for a floating fly.
Okay.
It was like a 7-foot, 11-inch rod. We had an 8-foot limit. So I wanted something to throw a floating fly on and the one I had made was close to 8-foot and it's just a moderate, you know, some medium light action rod for light line. And I used it for that. And just over the course of a couple of years, I started using it for some different things. I started using it for some small swim baits, you know, going up north,
okay,
going out to Beaver Lake whenever we were smallmouth fishing with light line. And I caught so many fish on it. I'd use 5-pound test with it. I caught so many on it. I just kept trying different techniques. I started trying a lot of different stuff with it. And so I knew once I started this, I knew I wanted to do something, you know, for those smallmouth type fisheries. And so we did that and I played around with some different lengths and just 7.4 was just a good balance between somebody that might not really feel comfortable with a real long rod.
Sure.
And, you know, or it was just a good in between and it's a good length for a lot of different things. And now that I've used it over the last 2 years or so, use this particular one, man, I throw crankbaits on it. I throw some top water on it. It's great for throwing a swim bait on light line, like a little Kitec or something.
Okay.
If you're fishing for spotted bass or smallmouth. You can even, I fish docks with it. And, you know, I have a 7-footer in the same medium light action that most people, you know, would use to skip docks, but I'll still do that some with this 7.4, but
wow,
it's an extremely versatile rod. I mean, it's got a real soft tip on it. It's got a lot of bend to it. I mean, it's a soft rod.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're able to use a lot of light line. Like I said, I throw 5-pound fluorocarbon on it a lot. I mean, that's like if I'm throwing a little swim bait, especially if this is clear water and there's not a lot of timber and stuff like that. I mean, that 5-pound test on a 3/16 ounce jig head with any type of little swim bait is hard to beat on a lot of different lakes around the country, all these lakes included. And this rod's just perfect for that. I mean, just lets those fish load up on it. You don't ever have to worry about breaking your line on a hook set.
Right.
Which you don't even really need to set the hook with this rod anyway. It's just a wind set. You just reel into them and just keep pressure on them and you got them. And those bigger fish, when you get them to the boat, that extra length, it just gives you a little bit more room for air.
Sure.
You know, when they surge, you got a lot more rod to give. So it helps protect that lighter line. That's one of the benefits of the longer rods, is to protect that lighter line when the fish get closer to the boat.
Well, I hope my wife's not listening, but I spent like an hour last night plotting my next purchases on the website. So We'll have to get a hookup for delivery here shortly.
That's right. Delivery and trial period.
There we go. There we go.
I'll let Steven test them out.
Yeah. I appreciate that. off-season plans. What, you know, we talked a little bit, you know, when fishing's over, you like kids, and I know you got lessons after school and stuff with them. What do you, what do you got planned for this off-season?
Yeah, I mean, not a whole lot. You know, I may plan a trip, you know, to a couple different sponsors. I think about potentially going out west for a weekend to go fishing.
Okay.
May go visit with Batson Enterprises out there north of Seattle for a weekend or so. But other than that, I want to watch a lot of Clemson football. I'm ready for it to start cooling off, and we'll do some fishing out here on the lake, some striper fishing and that kind of stuff. But, I mean, it's just a time for me to wind down. You know, I look forward to not knowing what I'm going to do, to be honest.
Yeah,
that's what I like about the off season is not necessarily having something planned and just being able to spend time with the family and all that good stuff. And, you know, it's time to start, you know, talking with sponsors for next year, and that'll all kick up here before too long. But, off season is just a time for me to kind of regroup, and, you know, I put a little bit of distance between me and the tournament scene.
Sure.
You know, I still like to fish a little bit, but, that's about it. Enjoy the holidays and the kids and all that good stuff, and get refreshed and ready for a new season after the first of the year.
And your Tigers are doing well. What do you think, of this new quarterback you got?
Man, he looks really good. I mean, he really does. And I think he's going to continue to progress. I think they've kind of limited what they've asked him to do up until this point. And I mean, he looks like a 3-year starter. I mean, he doesn't look like somebody that this was his first, you know, this was his first start special on the road this past week, and he looks really comfortable.
Yeah.
I think he throws a great deep ball. I mean, he's careful with the ball. He doesn't put a whole lot of balls in jeopardy. So I'm excited. I think he's gonna continue to grow, and you know, I think he has a chance to be really special by the end of the year.
Yeah. I had to sit there this past weekend with Taylor and watch the flip between the Clemson game, the South Carolina game. It seemed like there's one other football game on. And of course, the whole time I'm sitting there staring at her, you know, she broke her ankle, and I'm sitting there looking at this bright orange cast that when we're in the doctor's office, she goes, "I want a Clemson cast." And I'm like, oh my goodness. I have a tiger in my house, and I don't know how I ended up with one, but, it's fun.
That's a good thing.
It is a good thing. She could have, you know, different mascots that I really didn't like, you know, so I'll take a tiger when I get one.
That's right.
Pretty cool. Well, I appreciate you spending time with me. As always, let's keep in touch over the off season. Fourth season starts up next year on the FLW Tour. We'll get together and kind of do a preview show. And
all right, sounds good to me.
I do want to ask you one question though. If when you make the cup at Wichita next year, are we going to go back to the state park and school and bass again?
We will be in there. We'll be in there again.
There's a story for you, folks.
If they're there, we'll be there. I'll put it that way.
Gotcha, buddy. Well, take care of yourself. Thanks for being part of Woods and Water, South Carolina, as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's going to be a really short end of the show today. Hope you've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed doing it. I always enjoy coming in here on Saturdays and talking about the outdoors. This is a story from August the 22nd. You know, if you've ever traveled Highway 41 going north out of Mount Pleasant, if you've been over there in the last month, you know there's a new bridge there now. Well, you know what happened to the old bridge? It's out there as an artificial reef. The 41 bridge was removed. It's 168 feet of the bridge is destined for new life as an artificial reef 50 miles off the coast of Charleston. There and over 300 feet of water will become part of the South Carolina Memorial Reef, providing habitat for fish and sea life on what was formerly a sandy stretch of seafloor. You know, when you get out in the ocean and all, you know, it's pretty sandy and flat. And then you get to the ledge where it drops off a little bit and you get what's called live bottom. And they're just kind of like, I don't know, mountains in the desert type things, but it attracts the fish and all. And that's what these reefs do. They're artificial. Go out and drop them on a sandy place. And now, boom, you have a fish attractant because bait fish start to live there. And then the bigger fish come in, it becomes a really good place to fish. The first structures were placed at the reef in 2014. Two retired barges piled high with shipping containers, truck chassis, and radio towers. So you got billfish out there, all sorts of bottom fish, and that's conservation at its best. So, told you it was going to be a short ending to the show, but I hope you've had a good time. I hope you enjoyed it. I have, and looking forward to next time, probably next week. I've got an outdoor writers conference to put on next weekend in Florence, South Carolina. Won't be here, so we'll have to come up with some best of or something to fill in the hour. But, hey, make those plans to get outside in South Carolina now. You know, take those back roads when you can and never forget that camera because you never know what memory you're going to capture. See you next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hit me from behind. Yes, I'm